Okay, did we miss anyone while we'll be recording? Okay. Well, today we're going to continue our discussion on partnerships, but we've got a lot of other things to talk about. As we did last week, wanted to see how things are going with all of you, and we certainly want to talk about the All Grantee meeting and what we're planning to do with that. And then we're going to talk about probably the, aside from employment, probably the second most important, what we call critical issue of developing a fundable proposal and a successful grantee program. So as usually, we start out with news from Washington and what's happening with this RFA, Heather.
All right. Well, good afternoon or good morning, everybody, depending on where you're at. And yes, so we do have a little bit of news from Washington, just some updates, and it's probably kind of what you've all guessed, which is there is a little bit of a delay on the RFA. You know, initial timelines, they were looking at it coming out in June, and here we are in July, and there is no RFA out. So unfortunately, it got delayed a little bit, but they are still looking at it coming out soon. You know, from what we heard, it's still on the horizon. It's coming out soon. But what that means is, you know, we're in that time where you can start preparing for things. There is still work that can be done with the RFA coming out. So that means you can start working on a few things. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But that's the biggest news from Washington, is that no RFA yet, but it's coming soon. Now, just to remind you guys, for those that might have missed a couple of our last calls, we are calling it an RFA. If you've been with us for a while, you might have heard us call it in the past an RFP, or request for proposals. This year, we're calling it an RFA, or request for application. You know, very similar thing. It's just some of the forms are coming out in a slightly different order as before. So it's still that same RFP that we've talked about in the past. It's just there's going to be some forms that are maybe that you've done afterwards that are now being done beforehand. So things might look a little bit different for those of you that maybe have applied in the past. So you just want to make sure that you watch when that RFA does come out, that you kind of watch through it a little carefully, and we'll walk you through it, and we'll make sure that we highlight some of those areas with you all as well. But, you know, if you're starting to hear it being called, wait, an RFA, that is true. It is being called a request for applications now. But again, it's looming on the horizon, and it is due to come out this month now, but it did get pushed back a little bit. So that's kind of the big news from the HQ front. From the HMTRI front, you know, Steve's going to talk to you guys really heavily on the all grantee meeting side of things. And I'm going to let him talk to you guys about kind of the nitty-gritty bits and pieces of that. But I hope he won't mind. I will push you guys a little bit on registration. So registration has opened for the virtual 2020 All Grantee Meeting. For those of you that may not have attended the All Grantee Meetings with us in the past, normally they are in person, but you know, this is a year for adapting and trying new things. So this year it will be virtual. And this is a great opportunity to really discuss and explore all things environmental workforce development and job training related. So this virtual meeting will be held August 11th through the 13th from 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern via Zoom. And if you would like to register for that, we have had some registrations coming in already, but if you'd like to register for that, you go to brownfields-toolbox.org/2020-all-grantee-registration. Again, brownfields-toolbox.org/2020-all-grantee-registration. And don't worry, I will be pushing that out on the listserv tomorrow, and Mike will also include it on the PLC notes as well. And at this point, I think I will actually turn it over to Steve to talk to you guys a little bit more in detail about the All Grantee meeting.
Okay, thanks, Heather. This is Steve Fenton, and I want to thank you, all of you, first of all, for responding so quickly and thoroughly to the emails I've been sending out in request for a variety of different things, including co-facilitators, videos, student perspectives, et cetera. So you guys have been fantastic in responding. We already have a number of very good videos that came in, Groundwork, Rhode Island, Push Buffalo, Ronique, I know you're on the line. I just got yours from the West End Neighborhood House today. That was fantastic. And those are the kinds of things that we're going to be interspersing throughout our three-day conference to show folks of what's going on out there. They're fantastic. You've also responded fantastically with volunteering to be co-facilitators for many of the breakout sessions, which basically are going to be run like we have a series of talking points for each session. And the co-facilitator basically is there to help keep the conversation, you know, moving along and addressing the things in the talking points. And a lot of you have already volunteered to serve as co-facilitators. We really appreciate it and think this is going to work out really well. As Mike and Heather both said, it's going to be a trial for us because it's a new technology, although a lot of us have been in Zoom meetings when we actually put one together of this kind of scale. It'll be interesting to see how it works. But we're doing trial runs, and we're looking at everything to make sure things go as smoothly as possible. While we have a lot of co-facilitators already signed up for most sessions, there are still two sessions that I'm looking for a co-facilitator on. One of the sessions is B11. That one's called Program Tune-Up and Grant Writing Strategies. And the other one is B21, Community Awareness and Social Media. Those are two sessions I'm still looking for co-facilitators on. And if you have videos that you would like to share, virtual tour that you want to share with us, by all means, please feel free to send those in. We're also still looking for any videos you might have on student perspectives. You know, you might also call them a testimonial. We call them student perspectives. But in either case, if you have something like that as a video or could do one, that would be great. Of course, we wouldn't want anybody to be put in harm's way, you know, with the situation the way it is. But if you have anything that's already done and you'd like to share with us, by all means, send it in. We're going to try and show as many of those as we can to kind of keep things interesting with the virtual tours, with the breakout rooms, with the sessions. But things are coming along, so just wanted to thank you all for responding so quickly and putting up with all my emails. And if you've got any questions, feel free to give me a holler, send me an email. So thanks.
And just to let you guys know, for the co-facilitators, you know, really, you know, the little one that you would start out with, you know, maybe a 5-minute conversation on how your program relates to that topic. So if you're really strong, let's say in community awareness or social media, you know, you could really kind of showcase how that is a really big strength of your program, and then would kind of turn it over to the people that are in that virtual room and start that conversation. So you know, it's a really nice way to kind of open up that dialogue and have some things going. And Steve, if they were interested in participating or maybe had some student testimonials or a video tour that they would like to share, would you mind passing along your email address to them?
Sure. It's sfenton, F-E-N-T-O-N, 103@AOL.com. And you probably have gotten an email from me in the last week or so already. You might even have it there. But again, sfenton, 103@AOL.com.
Of course, any of you who may be new to this call and haven't gotten anything from us, Heather, why don't you give them your email so that we could get you on the PLC participant list and you could attend, get registration for this meeting and future announcements.
Absolutely. HKBALLOU at EICC.edu. Again, that's HKBALLOU at EICC.edu.
Great. And of course, if you ever have any questions, comments, suggestions, or complaints, just return the email. Or if you want out, just return the email and we'll we'll make sure we get you to the right place and answer any questions you might have. So that's always a fallback. But Heather is our principal contact, and if you want to get signed up, just email her with your contact information, and we'll make sure you're in the loop. The All Grantee Meeting is going to be really different and special, and because we're doing it in Zoom, it does add some additional challenges. For example, we're trying to make it simple enough so that when you log on to that Zoom, you download Zoom, or you log on to Zoom and you key into the meeting, we're hoping that's the only keying you're going to have to do. In other words, you will be guided to the breakout rooms that you put down on your registration. So that'll all kind of be automatic, and you'll be brought to the plenaries. When the plenaries are over, there'll be some breaks, and then you'll go to the breakout room that you wanted to go to. So it'll be fairly seamless if all works well. Probably the challenges we have is from our technical end is between PowerPoints and videos. We're not sure, to be honest, if how well we're going to be doing that. One of the things we're thinking of is putting everything up on the toolbox so that everyone will have PowerPoints and videos at their disposal. Whether or not they'll be embedded in each breakout is yet to be determined, and we're tending to not go that route because there's a lot of room for errors in that. If people have PowerPoints, that's fine. We'll post them, and you can use them in your discussion. But these are going to be a little different than the in-person face-to-face meetings in that we're not all going to be looking at a screen, so there'll be just a lot of discussion. So if you have PowerPoints, you could send us that PowerPoint, and you could use it as your talking point if you want to follow that, or just open the informal discussion and let us know what you're doing and what seems to be working for you and not for 5 or 10 minutes, and then pass it on to some of the other people in the room. And we've got these rooms arranged fairly well that people are requesting what room they want to be in, and we've got some very strong grantees in each of these rooms. So I think the discussions will go well. In addition to each room, one of us, Steve, Heather, I will be there taking notes. And we're also pairing regional coordinators with those who might be in that room so that they'll just have a chance to sit in and listen. And also, we'll have former EPA regional coordinators that have in-depth knowledge, just like Jeff, who may have some ideas and will be sitting in. And as things come up, he may be able to say, well, that we found that worked or that didn't work, or we might, something that nobody brought up is this or that, and you may want to consider. So again, it's going to be very informal. It certainly will be challenges as we go, but above all, we need your help. There's no question about it, because the All Grantee meeting, as those of you who have attended them in the past, is no better than the participants. It's either a huge success or it's not so much. And they've been really good because people have participated. So before we go on to partnerships, anyone have any ideas or questions about what we're trying to do here? Oh, one thing I want to say, that if you're going to do a PowerPoint, not that it'll be put up on your session, we've got to send it to Steve early. And the reason that is we have to program all this stuff in. So the sooner, if you want to post a PowerPoint or a video or something, send it to Steve. And Steve, you want to give him your email again, just to make sure?
Sure. It's sfenton103@aol.com. And again, that's sfenton103@aol.com.
Steve is collecting and coordinating all of the content for this meeting. Anyone have any questions about or suggestions of about this meeting or concerns? Certainly open to those. It'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting experiment. So, and we're getting a very good response very quickly. These timelines are short because it's amazing how fast July is going by, and there's a lot of pre-prep that has to be done. So sign up early. And send as much information as you can in. Well, today, we started last week, but I also, before I get started on partnerships, I think it's really important to find out, how's everyone doing? I mean, has anyone started anything in terms of a cohort? Is anyone on hold? Is anyone training out there? I'm just going to turn this over. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ronik. I start my cohort on the 27th. We originally had 20 individuals. We broke those up into 10. Our cohort traditionally runs 5 weeks long. We cut that down to 4 weeks. So we're going to run two cohorts in the summer and possibly run one during the fall months. We're still looking into that. The first week, we cut off our workforce readiness. So we're going to condense that, and then I'll be an instructor with the workforce readiness portion, social emotional learning, life skills in the morning. I'll have an afternoon session, so they'll be here pretty much the whole day. Traditionally, the first 2 weeks, they were only here about 3 hours. So we're going to get them some digital literacy, financial literacy on the second half of the day for the first week. Our instructor additionally comes in on the third week. He doesn't, and that's when he administers the majority of the certifications. We had some issues with some partners. The first 2 weeks, they, you know, we do social-emotional learning, but they also have opportunity to go to a farm and receive their forklift operator training and a soil sampling certification at a environmental company. But, you know, just due to the COVID and whether they, you know, they're not comfortable with coming out, and we're trying to restructure that situation where they may, you know, possibly come here, you know, and follow our little policy procedures instead of bringing, you know, a group of 10 people into their area. So we're working on that just with the forklift soil sampling. You know, they still may be able to receive that. So traditionally, all our graduates will receive 12 certifications. Three of those are OSHA certifications. One of them is the forklift and the soil sampling. So they may not get 12 this year, but, you know, we're still working on that, the forklift operator certification. We can get those individuals on site at the farm locally here in Wilmington. But, I mean, just in regards to planning, it was difficult. You know, we're going to move to, you know, this is a new, we're creating a new norm, so we're going to move to going quarterly. So he's going to, you know, continue to bring in 10. This was going to be a big spring cohort for us, but, you know, due to the success we had in the fall, we were able to get a lot of, you know, some big numbers, and people were very interested. We did a very good job of marketing on the social media. IG is a very good platform. You know, I've learned Facebook works, but a lot of the older people traditionally use Facebook. So even if we're talking about youth being 16 to 24 and even people older than that, you know, what's trending right now is just IG. You know, everyone's on Instagram. So, you know, by me creating that Instagram IG platform, those being able to follow people and being able to follow other agencies in our local area, we're able to, you know, get a good buzz and keep people just abreast of what was going on, especially during the pandemic. It was like a good problem because, you know, I mean, if everyone here has an iPhone, you know, on a lot of our iPhones, you can track pretty much your usage on, you know, social media platforms and your productivity and everything like that. So everyone's pretty much, you know, that just went up, you know, because no one can do anything outside the house, majority. But so, you know, so that was a good, you know, free marketing tool for us, using that social media platform. Still, constantly recruiting people, keeping them engaged, getting those, even support services individuals may need, and placing people from the past cohort actually worked well for me because I got a lot of grassroots stuff, you know, from word of mouth recruitment, just from the individuals who I placed. I even have individuals who are not working but just still speak very highly of the program. You know, they either opted to do other things or, you know, just the engagement that I had with them. They were just very happy to be here and like how we interacted with them and engaged them. That's how we got a lot of our buy-in. So, you know, there was a lot of good word of mouth marketing that we got from that. So moving on forward, you know, we're going to continue probably to just have 10 people in just for physical distancing purposes and go quarterly. So we pretty much probably have 2 weeks of recruit. You're still getting calls in here, you know, but so far, you know, that's what we're doing. In the near future, I'm actually even thinking about doing refreshers for one of those quarterly cohorts. So the refreshers would definitely benefit past graduates, and we can do the refreshers. My contractor, he can do the refreshers for a one-day online webinar. So the refresher would be like an OSHA 30, but more so for like a administrative level. And I think he also says he can do like OSHA 10s as well too for the one-day webinar. So, you know, we had some people, everyone who gets in the program initially wants to be an entrepreneur. They want to go into business for yourselves and things of that nature. But a lot of certifications they get from this program, they can use in other fields as well, too. And Mike mentioned that months ago, you know, the environmental technician is just so broad. So you can go into different aspects in the field. You just got to find a way, find your own lane and learn how to maneuver. And that's one of the things we, on the front end, doing a workforce readiness portion of it, you know, we're trying to get these individuals to get the buy-in for themselves and just to be creative and get them exposed to many things that you can actually do in this field. Because it is vastly broad. Waste removal all the way to an asbestos worker, even janitorial services like, you know, running your own business. You know, that's real big right now.
That's fantastic. So this strategy, and it sounds really good, you go 10 quarterly, it's a lot more work. But it's an interesting concept. You could keep social distancing. Now, there seems to be a couple of models. There's your model, and then some are trying to go every other day in training. You know, have one class one day, say Monday, Wednesday, the other class. That's got its issues too, though. So it's going to be interesting to see how that falls out. Anyone else that's trying a similar thing to Ronnie?
Hi, I'm Shanae Robinson. I'm with Southern University at Shreveport. This is actually one of my first calls that I'm able to get on. And so we were awarded a EPA grant. We just received our award letter actually in May of this year. And so our first cohort is scheduled to start in October. With COVID-19 going on, me kind of being the coordinator, I'm looking at some online opportunities. Wanted to be able to offer OSHA 10 in the classroom, but I'm hoping to put as much online as I can. But speaking with OSHA, they're not currently approving any additional online training. So I'm looking at maybe some contracting with some organizations to offer some portion of our certifications online. And so that's kind of all I have right now. It's kind of my first call, so I'm just kind of here to listen and learn a little bit, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that's the idea. What different people are trying to do, and it's all new territory. So the challenge for us is that our target communities aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily have computers, they have tablets, maybe phones. So online becomes problematic. There are some that are able to do it, but many can't. So that leads you down to some sort of face-to-face in person. And then the challenge is how does that work? For those of you on the call who are just thinking of applying or re-upping, of course, as Heather said, by the time the RFA comes out in mid-July, it'll be after Labor Day when the awards are announced, and you could count on maybe almost a year before you're ready to start training. So that comes into this calculation of what's it going to be like a year from now. And most of us would like to think it will be over, or there will be vaccines and we'll all be able to go back to face-to-face, and perhaps the next annual all-grantee meeting in August of next year, we'll all be able to get together. But there's no guarantee to that. So that's going to be a challenge when all of you start to write your proposals, whether you do contingency, where you do some computer literacy in the early stages, or use tablets instead of print material. I think in most cases, the way it sounds is that contractors are the critical issue in most cases. Many people can do in-house training for some of these courses, but for the certification courses where the instructor has to be certified and his curriculum may have to be certified, you're going to have to go out to a vendor or a partner of some sort to provide that training. And then the question becomes, what can the vendor or contractor do? What is he willing to do in different cases? So that adds an additional issue. And we're going to talk about partners in a second. But anything else out there that anyone wants to contribute before we move on? I think Renique has the right idea, and he's going in the right direction here, and it sounds good. And we're going to continue to try to get ideas from different people, and we've seen a couple of models going on already, so we'll continue to keep these discussions going. Some of you may have missed what we're trying to do in the PLCs, aside from all talk about the all-grantee meeting and some of the COVID issues. It's trying to set you up for responding to this RFA when it comes out. There, for HMTRI purposes, we kind of divide the successful operation of environmental workforce development training program into 8 critical issues. And there's a number of them that I put in the notes. And, of course, again, email your contact information to Heather if you're not getting the notes. Sometimes we get pushbacks, or maybe you're on a 365, we send them out in mass mail, so you may or may not be getting notes. You should be getting notes every Friday. If you're not, just indicate that to Heather, and we'll either re-put you on the list, put you on the list, or try to work around maybe the fact that they're bouncing them back. We call the list after we get a lot of pushbacks. We'll make sure you get the notes. And, of course, we always publish them on brownfieldstoolbox.org, so you can always go and get the notes for all 234 of our sessions in that case. But in those notes, we talk about our critical issues, and we also have a newsletter where we talk about these 8 critical issues. But the first one, of course, is community and labor market assessments, and that's getting to know your target community, getting to know your community and where you're going to be training, and also getting to know your employers. And that leads us into 2 very critical issues. And as I said at the beginning of this session, aside from employment, placement, and tracking, these are probably the 2 most critical issues that you could confront, not only in operation of your program, but in getting the grant in the first place. And that's partnership development and leveraging. And really, they go hand in hand. You need to partner to lever your program, and almost all of your partners are leveraging your program in one way or another. They're providing in-kind support. They may be providing instructors. They're providing maybe money. They're providing facilities. They may be providing fit-up suits, personal protective equipment. They may be providing health services, and we'll get into that in just a second. But those issues, when you get the RFP, and it'll be very similar to last year's, and we also put those links in the notes, there will be minor changes and maybe minor point changes and maybe minor things in curriculum that they'll support. We'll be talking about that at a later date. But for the most part, the evaluation or ranking criteria, which is graded on the curve, in other words, the top scorers are the ones that are considered to be candidates for funding. It's graded on the curve, so there are exceptions, but for the most part, those with the highest scores are contenders. And the sad thing often is you might miss that cutoff. It depends how much money they get. If they've got $3 million, they've got $200,000 a grant, that's 15 grants. So the 15 highest scores, with some exceptions, there's additional considerations that we'll talk about at a later date. For the most part, those 15 people will be considered for funding, and you may be 2 points, and we've heard this many times, 3 points, 4 points away from the cutoff, and you weren't able to be funded. And it's nobody's fault. It's just a question of you only have so much money, and you've got to figure out an objective way to distribute that money. So the objective here is to get as many ranking criteria points as possible. And if you take the ranking criteria, which includes collaboration with local remediation and environmental prospects, essentially your labor market assessment, that counts for 6 points. Partnership building that we're going to be talking about today and in the notes, that counts for 8 points. Employer involvement in your program, which is, we consider that as a partnership type of activity, 12 points shows you the importance of, that's over 10% of the total point count, and then leveraging 3 points. So these are all, and this totals 29 points, almost a third. Now, after what I just said, that you could lose by 2 points and not be concluded, or 3 or 4 points, 29 points is a lot of ranking criteria. And you really have to nail this whole area of partnership, leveraging, employer involvement. And we consider that pretty much to be all the same thing, at least all connected. So if you develop a very strong partnership strategy, you will be able to answer these ranking criteria very, very well. And you'll be able to score high on them, which will give you a lead among other proposals. So I've talked about how important and how many points these are, but why do we need partners? Well, you know, we all know you get $200,000 for 3 years. You have to partner. You have to lever, or you can't do this program. It's just a fact of all the things that EPA requires. These are very difficult programs. They have to be laid out in your proposal. And to be honest, they take a lot more resources. You could double that easily, maybe triple it. If you look at other agencies, one of the shining examples of EPA is their very cost-efficient cost of training is incredible. And that's all because of leveraging. And, of course, the program was founded on the idea of partnering and leveraging. So the whole thing is based on that. So what I'm saying is you've got in your proposal, and now before the proposal comes out, you're going to have to start establishing your partners. You can't just start listing names in there. You've got to develop the relationship. And, of course, in many cases on your strongest partners, you may want a letter of support to include in your appendices. So you need to do this. In fact, EPA may verify that your partners are legit and you put their contact information. They may call them to make sure that you're reporting true partners. Let's look at this top priority list that everyone needs to have. And I don't care who you are. This is every grantee is different across the country, but all of them share a couple things in common. You definitely want a WIB or one-stop relationship. Workforce Investment Boards, those are that's a large parent organization. Locally, it's one-stops. Employment centers, they have many different names. Employment centers, one-stops, local job center. You need to make that relationship, and you need to find the one that's local, that's going to be in the target area you're working in. You may want to go to the WIB if you can develop a relationship with the larger organization, that's even better, and work with the locals. These are the people who are going to qualify your participants for Department of Labor bennies. In other words, a good program, and a good program in their proposal will indicate they screen all of their participants to see if they qualify for Department of Labor benefits. That might include things like work shoes or training materials, perhaps personal protection equipment. Now, having said that, every WIB is different. And when we work with the national WIB organizations, they say, to be honest, we've got stars and we got rocks. And we've got fantastic WIBs in this country who are supporting very heavily organizations like Environment Workforce Development. And we've got some that are very bureaucratic and they're really almost no help. But you need to contact them and you need to try to develop a relationship with them. That is a must on every grant. I would hate to see a PLC member submit a grant and not talk about them as a critical partner. They're going to help you in recruitment. They're going to help you in placement. They may help you depending on what services they offer. They could, I'm not saying they're going to recruit all your people, but they can screen them. They can pass on recommendations. When people go to an employment center, your organization may be on that list. They can send you a list of people that they suggest, and then you can screen them further. It gives you two levels of screening. The WIB will provide people, and then you've got additional people. When it comes to placement, the same, the reverse goes. They've got their own placement officers. They'll work very closely with you. And they, you need to have that relationship with them to know all the screening you do, all the certifications that you give. So when they've got people out there and they're calling employers, and they have a list, of course, all kinds of employers, but many of them may need someone that you don't, isn't even on your radar. It may be a hospital that's looking for someone with cleanup certs or something in the viral area or something in the personal protection area, a HAZWOPer, for example. They would have access to those people where you, it may not even be on your radar screen. So again, WIBs. Health and Human Services. You really, if you're not thinking about them, you need to. They have caseworkers. That you may be able to, they may assign to you, to all of your people. They provide support services, whether it's child care, physicals, drug testing. People are, we have grantees who have paid for drug testing that don't have to because their Health and Human Services or some associated health department would have done it for them as a matter of their duties and their grants that they get. So you really need to touch base with Health and Human Services or some that's a generic term for a lot of different health agencies that might be in your community, county. The county health service is probably the place to go in your target community. And these are all musts. City Hall, now that's a generic term for a whole lot of things. And I'll talk about a lot of them. Our best grantees are in City Hall of some sort. Now, they're in different places in City Hall. They might be in the Neighborhood Development and Economic Office. They might be, whether it's a Department of Natural Resources, and that may also be county, but it might be local. It's also in the area of brownfields, the Brownfields Department, the Brownfields Office. That may be county. You may also have a state office in that case. Now, when you get to those ranking criteria and you start filling out your grant application, they're going to be asking you. As I said, there's 6 points that they're going to ask you. How are you coordinating with local remediation and environmental cleanup organizations? You're going to need to know who are the ARC, the assessment, the cleanup, revolving loan fund grantees, and you want to be able to have as a partner some office of brownfields, whether it's county, local, or state. You're going to really want to have that to slam dunk those 6 points. You're going to want to talk with, of course, Health and Human Services that has to do with your, again, your drug testing, perhaps. Your deaner kind of links into your brownfields. The deaner the Department of Natural Resources or whatever they call it, Environment Department, they'll be the ones you'll want to contact to get to the brownfields people. So you want to go to your county, your local, start with your local, and your more urban areas that you're going to have a local Department of Natural Resources, but they may be connected with the county or the state. But you want to touch base with them to see where are the brownfields in your community and who's doing it and some contact information. And there's someone who's coordinating all of that, and you want to get his name. And he's the one you want to partner with. And now, to be honest, those are not people who are doing the nuts and bolts work. They're not the ones that are necessarily going to be hiring your people. But on the surface, the optics of this are that you're connected with them, and they know who the contractors are. They know where the sites are. They know who the contractors are, and they're coordinating all of this. So you're going to eventually want to work with the contractors. We know that. And they may even be hired by the city or by the county. And you also want to know who is the purchasing managers in that city hall or county. And, of course, every time that comes to mind, Rochester, for those of you who are at all grantee meeting, Rochester is in City Hall. They have access to the mayor. They have access to purchasing managers. And this is probably the golden example of someone who is an organization that's in City Hall. They know who the environmental contractors are, who's hiring. Do they have first source hiring agreements? Are there PLAs, the requirement to have people from the city or even people from brownfields graduates involved in the cleanup? This is the gold standard, getting into City Hall and how you do that. Actually, we've had several people who were in City Hall. The anecdote that I talk about was City of Detroit, where our project officer was roaming through the halls, working in City Hall and also working on this project, serendipitously sat on a meeting, and all the contractors saying, we can't find enough people to do this demolition. And she raised her hand, look at me, I've got all you need. And they were inundated with requests for graduates. Just simple. Same thing happened in Rochester, and the same thing could happen in your organization. But more important, you want to get that into your grant. You want to get that. When they evaluate these grants, they don't know who you are. They don't know how good you are, and they don't know what you're doing. The only thing they know is what's on paper. And when we get closer, we'll be talking about grantsmanship and grant writing. But right now, we're talking about partnerships. Of course, associated with that City Hall are the municipal services. And there's a lot of them. We got the fire department. We've got emergency response. We've got law enforcement. We've got the judicial system. We've got the housing authority. And every one of these, and we may have to pick these apart in more detail, but every one of them are partners. And in the notes, I'll put some examples of some of the partners of some of our grantees. But you'll see these in our best grantees. They're working, for example, with law enforcement. Cypress Mandel works very closely with the courts involving expunging records, travel, tickets, car tickets. They're working with Weed and Seed in the law enforcement area. They're working with some of these organizations. They're working with the fire department. In fact, getting PPE and assistance from the fire department. Now, some of these things may be different right now because of COVID, but again, you could start lining up these partnerships, and you want to have them in your grant. The judicial system, the housing authority, amazingly, housing authority appears more often than you would think. And interestingly enough, they're a source of, housing authority is a good source of recruits for your program because they're in your target area. They've got access to people who are getting assistance, and they also hire your graduates. So housing authority appears very often in our lists of partners in these grants. There's no question that employers are in that partnership, both as advisors, hopefully to participate in your program. And of course, as we said before, the employer counts for 12 points in this whole process. 12 points is one of the highest in all the ranking criteria. You want to have a commitment from your employers to look at, not to hire, to look at your graduates. You've got to develop these relationships. It's part of your labor market assessment, but it's also part of your partnership development. And you want those employers to be on your list of key partners in your grant. So you need to talk about, again, not necessarily a commitment to hire, because they can't give you that, particularly now. What they can do is they can give you a commitment to look at your graduates. They can suggest that they'll participate in your program. They may fund it. It's in their best interest, because your graduates will provide them with about $5,000. We've heard $3,000 to $10,000 worth of certifications and experience and training. They can also be advisors in your program. Again, advisors are partners, and you're going to want to have employers in your cadre of advisors, at least a couple of them. So employees, you can't emphasize enough on employees.
Cedric Davis, City Manager, Marlin, Texas.
Great. We were just talking about that, how important city managers are as partners. And we included you as your occupation as one of the most important people that everyone has to include as a partner in their grant proposal, because you have access to all of these other organizations, whether it's economic, community development, neighborhood development, it could be health, it could be social services, and definitely a place to go. Community groups, again, a very important partner, whether they're faith-based, neighborhood organizations, local community centers. Your local community center and your target group may end up as a training facility. You may be using even the police station as a place to do an orientation or to recruit people. Community groups are, again, rank right up there as far as what is your relationship to the community. And you're going to be asked these questions, and you want to be able to respond that they're your partners and they're a critical partner in your program. So again, faith-based links to the community neighborhood organizations. And then, of course, the local community centers, which are, we'll talk about nonprofits next, extremely important, whether it's Goodwill, young community developers, Youth Build. There might be a coalition of abandoned properties. These are nonprofits just like you're going to be, and they're getting funded to do the same, not the exact same thing, but to help the same people that you're helping. And so you have to keep this in mind. These people are very happy to lever your program because they're getting credit for levering your program. And this is something that sometimes people don't realize. We're all helping each other. You're helping bring people off the streets and creating useful careers. Other nonprofits are perhaps getting people off the streets, keeping them out of jail, providing them with food, child services, transportation. That's their objective, but their objective is synergistic to you. So they become your partner, but they become your leveraging source. And this is where this leveraging comes in with the nonprofits. And as I talked about transportation, many include someone in the local DOT, whether it's a bus company or part of municipal services that are providing transportation. The bigger your target area is, the more important this is, where they may have free or reduced bus fees for your participants. And you don't want to, if that's possible, you want to include them in your partner list, because they're critical. Again, it's a leveraging services. They're providing free transportation or levered transportation. It's a levered source. So you don't want to leave them out. And of course, when we talked about employers, if you're in a if you're not in a right-to-work state, and maybe even if you are, you need to be working with organized labor, whether it's a local five, you need to be talking to them about first hire, project labor agreements, and you need to contact the business managers of locals, and those are the locals that have to do with environmental. In some cases, it's a heating, ventilating, air conditioning. It might be construction workers, ironwork, chemical workers. What you want to do is find out what's strong, and you may even, when you talk to your employers, get some input on labor organizations. This holds mostly for people in urban areas. It's really important that if you're in an urban area, you develop a relationship, or preferably this partnership with a local. It lets the readers know that, oh, you're not just looking at non-union jobs, but you're getting assistance from organized labor. And this is a plus, plus, plus again when you review your program. Well, I've run through, and you're probably bored with this, a litany of partners that if I were trying to help you write the dynamite grant, I would say you need to include all these as your partners. Now, easier said than done. How do you establish all these partnerships? This is the thing. This is why this is the first thing we're talking about before this grant comes out. You've got to start making some cold calls and doing some research and finding out who these people are. And you need to suggest to them that you are attempting to write a proposal for federal funding. And the most important thing is that you have very good partners and you consider them as essential in this, and you need to explain your program. And you need to ask them, if you are funded, would you partner with us? Now, the easy answer is, yeah, this is what we'll do. They may even refer you to some other sources. In fact, they may even refer you to some other grants locally that none of us know about, that, or they may have some CGDB money, and they say, well, we've been throwing around this for a long time, and now that we know you're out there, we'll keep you in mind for some other, whether it's project planning funds or something very close to this. We know you're there. We're interested in working with you. Now, depending on that call, you start drilling down on, okay, you're going to be a partner. We got to keep you informed, because if we put you in the grant, we've got to have a genuine relationship with them. And your biggies, the ones that like the WIB, the biggies, your employers, the WIB, the City Hall organizations, you're going to want a letter of support. We don't want, EPA doesn't want letters from senators and congressmen and movie stars. They don't need that. They want to know, who are your real partners who are providing you basically leverage support, who are contributing to your program. So as you start to develop these, and this takes a long time, and the question is, can you do this in 2 months? You know, it's the long term. You have to explain to them this grant is nothing that's going to happen right this instant. Now, I'm not just talking about new grantees. I'm talking about those of you who are in your first or second year, because remember, there's going to be a time you're going to have to re-up. And those of you who already have established partners are way ahead of the game. But remember, there's going to be a time when you're going to compete against newcomers and other people who may, to be honest, may have been working on their partnerships and may come up with a stronger proposal than you. And the cardinal sin is you don't want to be funded and then not funded. To keep on the top of that curve, you've got to keep expanding your program and expanding your partnership. So you want to develop these relationships. And certainly what EPA always says is you can't submit the same old grant proposal. It's not going to work because they keep them. So whether you're new or you're old or you want to be, start working on these partnerships. We'll talk about this more in the PLC notes. And I'm sure we're going to come back to it because it's just so important and flows through the entire project. And again, start right now. And I know it's real early and it's not early in the process, but it's going to happen. And the way you handle this is you make the relationship, you get the contact information, you see how interested they are in. They may want to pursue it right now. They may say, okay, that's fine. You're submitting this. We want you to do this. We want you to do some pre-planning stuff. We want to work. Can you come to these meetings we're having? Because right now, employment is at the top of the list. So can you come to this meeting and can you get in this loop right now, irregardless of the EPA grant? We want to work with you. Start the relationships. And, of course, you have to inform them, you know, this is a long, drawn-out thing. You're going to submit after Labor Day. You've got to have hopefully get their confirmation letters by the things that won't be awarded towards the December. And by the time all the paperwork and grant things gone, it will be this time next year when you'll be actually training students. But again, you gotta start laying this groundwork. And you really can't, in your proposal, start naming these names without even contacting them. You've got to have them all lined up. And, of course, we'll talk about instructors and curriculum, but it's something you may also want to consider as far as your instructors go. So, well, as always, I kept you longer than you wanted to be. But anyone have any ideas or questions regarding partnerships or partnerships that have really worked well that we haven't talked about? Okay. Well, I thought I would throw that out. I would continue working on this, and I would also, we'll be talking about this again at a later date, and hopefully between now and the next PLC, this RFA will be out, and there will be a webinar that'll talk about the RFA and what the RFA means, and we're going to be concurrently in the PLCs talking about not what it means, but how do you respond to it in a way that you can get up as high on that curve as possible. So anybody want to say anything about anything? We good? Okay. Well, let's end this week, and we'll be sending out some notes, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
So take care, everybody. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Y'all take care
now. Take care. All right. Take care. Yeah.